Hey, wouldn't it be great if Biden actually answered some tough questions? Well, we're going to do that for him today. Hey, welcome back to the Barry Farrar Show, Culture Shift. Great to be with you again. Today, we're going to have some fun. I thought a good way to get a summary of some news and address one of the most common complaints I've heard recently is to have a pretend interview. I'll be the journalist, and in some cases, I'll be an open and transparent president of the United States. And in some cases, since we really just don't know what to do, we'll just show something else like a cut and run clip. As you might have seen, Biden doesn't answer any hard questions. It often goes like this.
Thank you very much.
And he hasn't even met with his cabinet since July. I mean, it isn't like he's breaking any records for being a workaholic. The least he could do with his very light schedule is answer some questions. But he cuts and runs so fast you can hardly even hear the hard question.
Thank you very, very much.
Why do you continue to trust the Taliban, Mr. President? Why do you continue to trust their pledges, Mr. President?
He seems to believe that since the press is so in his camp that he doesn't have to answer any hard questions. So I wonder what it would be like if he were given some real questions and on top of that, he actually answered them in a transparent way. So here we go. We're all asked some questions as the journalist, and in some cases, I'll answer them as if I was a transparent and open President Joe Biden, and sometimes with something extra. So here we go. Mr. POTUS, has Kamala Harris, your vice president, done a good job of fixing the border?
Well, she went to Guatemala and to an airport near Mexico. When I think about it, the truth of the matter is she has not really done anything substantial. I mean, in fact, there's a record number of illegal immigrants coming across the border into the United States, and the caravans continue, and the illegal contraband and sex trafficking is at an all-time high.
Mr. President, does she do a good job, though, of, like, managing her staff?
No. She kind of treats her staff like a scoldy old 1970s-style angry feminist. Sort of reminds me of back then when I was getting my start.
Mr. President, do you think that your Secretary of State, Mr. Blinken, did a good job in the Afghanistan withdrawal?
Well, the disengagement strategy doesn't seem to work as well as I thought. I mean, I had no idea the Taliban would advance so fast. I just wanted out of there. I didn't really have a plan to get Americans out. It turns out it was really kind of a debacle.
Now, Mr. President, do you feel guilty at all for the deaths of the 13 U.S. service members? I mean, when they came home, why did you keep looking at your watch?
Well, Mr. Reporter, to your first question, I don't really feel that guilty. I'm a political guy, and in this case, the ends justified the means, and that's just the way it is. To your second question, I always look at my watch when I'm bored or don't want to be in that setting or just generally don't care. It's kind of an old habit.
Wow, Mr. President, thanks for your transparency, I think. But do you feel bad about the reality that we just up and left when there were still at least 100 Americans behind enemy lines and thousands of green card holders?
It is sort of an unforced error. I'll have to give you that. I mean, we did
leave the embassy in Kabul in a rush and the Bagram airfield at night when no one was watching. We thought that was kind of a good idea, but I guess it's a world-class Air Force base. And until we abandoned it, we had control and we could have kept that and maintained kind of a limited engagement approach. But as the president, I believe in total disengagement. So out we went.
But now things are really going downhill fast, don't you think? I mean, don't you feel, Mr. President, responsible for the chaos in Afghanistan? I mean, for example, October 15th, the Islamic State claimed responsibility for two suicide bombings that killed more than 40 people during Friday prayers at this mosque in the Afghan city of Kandahar. And just a week ago, the local branch of the terrorist outfit committed a suicide attack that left nearly 50 people dead in that northern city of Kunduz. Doesn't this bother you?
Come back, Joe. Mr. Biden, I mean, doesn't it bother you that 95% of the Afghans aren't getting enough to eat?
I mean, that's according to the United Nations World Food Program. I mean, doesn't it bother you that almost all of the country's population of 40 million could fall below the poverty line in coming months, according to the UN? I mean, do you have anything to say about the reports that in Afghanistan, some people are selling their children to pay their bills? Okay, Mr. President, we'll move to economics. Do you recall that your Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen in her confirmation hearings had something to say about how she was going to do it? What did she promise to be? Oh, yes, I remember everything. Yellen promised that she would be a voice for fiscal sanity. And how you would say, can that be? Well, she's just a really fiscally sane person. Well, how can she be the voice of fiscal sanity when she supports the Democrats' $3.5 trillion spending plan? Well, Mr. Reporter, it doesn't really cost that much. I mean, to be truthful, it'll cost a lot more because all those programs grow once they're put in place. But Mr. President, why does she support requiring banks to reveal all transactions over $600? Well, Reporter, Janet's smart. And she says it will help with tax collection, and it makes it a lot easier for the IRS to snoop on you. Well, Mr. Reporter, that is a concern. But, you know, I went to an oil and gas fundraiser once, and I'm told it doesn't just increase the cost of the gas at the pump, but everything that's connected to petroleum, cosmetics and silicone and paint and polymer and plastic and adhesive and fertilizer and pharmaceuticals. Mr. President, can't you just be honest and tell us how precarious things are economically? Mr. Reporter, you mean like totally honest? Man, well, debt's at $28.9 trillion. The gross domestic product is only $22.9. I mean, we have to spend 140% more on our debt than we crank out in gross domestic product. Tax revenue's at $3.8 trillion. Debt's 7.5 times that revenue. So, if I wasn't a politician, Mr. Reporter, I'd have to say that this is a totally irresponsible situation. Mr. President, what about inflation? I mean, your team has continued to deny that it's a problem, and yet at the same time, they blame citizens or companies for the problem. Just level with us. Isn't inflation a problem already? Well, yes. Last I looked, pretty much everything is up over the previous year. Heck, rental cars are more expensive by like 42%. Gas and fuel oil, that's over 42% too. Propane, kerosene, firewood, all that stuff, that's over like 27%. Used cars and trucks, over 24%. Crazy. Big numbers. Bacon. I like bacon. Bacon, meats, poultry, fish, all that's up as much as 17%. Crazy numbers. Furniture, new cars and trucks and sporting goods and appliances, they're all up. And you know what really makes me mad? I mean, as President of the United States, I like to get a late night peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Peanut butter's up. Now, that's getting personal. I mean, it would really make it hard on me if I had to pay for it. And the list goes on to shoes and haircuts and coffee and motor vehicle maintenance and postage and rent. All these are up a lot. The most casual observer would have to conclude that inflation is indeed a problem. So, Mr. President, you admit that inflation's a real problem. Why are you still trying to ram through this $3.5 trillion rewrite of the American idea? I mean, won't that send more money after fewer goods? Won't that make the problem worse? Well, Mr. Reporter, let me say it like this. I mean, you want me to be totally honest about it? We can't even pass this legislation without some good old-fashioned trickery. I mean, for Pete's sake, Democrat Senators Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema are still against it. I'm working behind the scenes, though, between naps, to figure out how to pass that thing. Mr. President, can we move to the military? COVID and vaccine mandates. Ah, sure, you know me. I'm an open book. Well, Mr. President, first of all, just in general, do you believe the traditional medical axiom that if someone gets a virus and recovers from it, that he has some form of natural immunity? So, Mr. Reporter, you want me to be like transparent here, right? I mean, like, Well, of course. I mean, it's well established when your body fights off a virus that you have some immunity to that virus. I mean, that's what vaccines try to emulate, right? They try to do with some artificial injection, which your body does naturally, of course. Well, then, Mr. President, why don't we make some accommodation for people who have had COVID and fully recovered from it? Aren't there like numerous studies from around the world that show natural immunity to COVID to be equal to or better than the vaccine? And isn't that valid? Well, Mr. Reporter, if we admit all those who have recovered from COVID don't need a vaccine, how on earth can we control and monitor things? I mean, man, that'd be like 40 to 50% of the population. Be really hard to be in control. Do we have a vaccine winner, Mr. President? I mean, like, which one's the best? Moderna, Pfizer, or J&J? Well, it depends. If you look at how fast Pfizer wanes, you might be tempted to pick Moderna. But if you look at some of their adverse reactions, you might be tempted to pick J&J. Just sort of depends. Well, what's the overall real effectiveness of the vaccine? I mean, can you explain relative risk reduction versus absolute risk reduction, Mr. President? Well, sure, I'm an open guy. Relative risk reduction sort of skews the results in favor of the vaccine's overall effectiveness. It doesn't really explain the real reduction in your likelihood to get the virus after receiving the vaccine. And absolute risk reduction, that shows the real reduction in the risk of getting it. And of course, when you look at those numbers, it really changes the conversation. But I still really, really, really believe that you're less likely to go to the hospital if you take that vaccine. I mean, in my heart of hearts, I can't say that you really need the vaccine if you already had COVID and recovered from it. But anyway, Mr. President, why are you so slow to admit the value of valid medical treatments that are therapeutic after somebody gets COVID? Ah, Mr. Reporter, you mean like the monoclonal, the therapeutic protocol, or even the latest Merck pill? Well, let me ask you a question, Mr. Reporter. How would there be enough fear to force compliance if we have proven ways to treat it? Okay, Mr. President, what's going on with the military? Well, I'm happy to say that we have over 90% compliance with getting the vaccine in the arms of military personnel. Mr. President, why is the Navy being sued by First Liberty on behalf of some of these Navy guys who are against the vaccine for some reason or the other? Oh, they have this antiquated notion that there could be a real medical exemption. Or can you believe it? This is time to whisper in a really weird way. Religious exemptions. But, Mr. President, are you really in favor of discharging them for having a religious exemption? I mean, we've seen the Navy's mandatory COVID vaccine and reporting policy. I mean, it seems like something from China or North Korea. I mean, even the name, the COVID Consolidation Disposition Authority. And are you really serious about discharging them and then hitting them with a financial penalty? I mean, how does that help recruit in the future? And how does that help us become a strong fighting force? Now, Mr. Reporter, not so fast there, man. I've got to let the mandate people do their thing. They know how to get compliance. You heard my speech. We want everyone vaccinated, period. And as far as recruiting is concerned, we don't really want those type of people in the military anyway. I mean, it's been really historically hard to get that voting nut cracked for us. This helps crack that voting nut problem in the military. So, Mr. President, you have no legitimate reason to threaten these brave service members with court-martial or involuntary separation? I mean, when we recruited service members in the past, it used to be God, family, and country. They were defending our freedom rights, the first of which is religious freedom. But it seems like you're forcing them to choose between faith and country. I mean, these guys are simply exercising their legal and constitutional right to submit a religious accommodation request. It looks like the way you're doing this is you're not going to really give them any religious accommodation at all. Don't you believe in the First Amendment? I mean, the first part of the First Amendment?
So thank you. God bless you, and may God protect our troops. Thank you.
Mr. President,
one message to OPAC.
Thank you. May God protect our troops, our diplomats, and all brave Americans serving in harm's way. God bless you all. May God protect our troops. Thank you. So, please get vaccinated now. If you go to vaccines.com, so please get vaccinated today. God bless you all and may God protect our troops. Thank you. So thank you again, and God bless you, and may God protect our diplomats and all those in harm's way. Thank you.
Mr. President, can you guarantee every American will be out before the troops leave?
Sanctions?
Can you guarantee?
Did sanctions come up at all in the G7 meetings?
Thank you all very much, and thank the press for being here. We're going to go private now.
Well, that interview didn't really happen. But if it did, and if the President of the United States was truly honest, that's how it could have gone. We'll do some rendition of this again soon. Until then, to your success, and that depends on your.